Well, hello and welcome to this segment of Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh. It's been a while since I've been on. We did some revamping of this show, so we're going to be doing like 20-minute segments from now on every few months. As often as I can get guests. And anyway, it's good to be back. And my guest today is Luis Tempirio, the president and director and president of the board of trustees of the Klein Esopus Museum in Esopus. And he is going to be joining us today and telling us some of the history of Esopus. And so please welcome Luis to the segment. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Jack, for having me. I really appreciate the fact that we can talk about the community and the history of the local area, which, by the way, just to let you know that the area, this area, the Esopus area, the Mid-Hudson Valley, is a very eclectic area and rich in history. It is the gem of the Hudson Valley, the Mid-Hudson Valley. And with that gem, you think of it as many facets. And the facets are the industry, the people that are here, the scenery, the transportation, many of the things that we kind of take for granted that this was our history. But when it goes all the way back to the beginning of our nation, Esopus, or the Mid-Hudson Valley, or the original Esopus land patent, goes all the way back to the founding. It was before 1776, which, you know, the American Revolution.
Right, yeah.
Right. So in that case, what we have is the original first settlement was founded in Henry Hudson, coming up from the old world, coming up the Hudson River, up the Hudson Harbor, all the way up. And that was in 1609. And one of the first places that he stopped that was absolutely beautiful and pristine was the Roundout, where the Roundout comes into the Hudson, right across from Rhinecliffe and Rhinebeck, and right there. And that was originally, and that, by the way, the original land patent, the Esopus land patent, extended all the way up to almost here in Catskill, where we are sitting right now, out to the Shawangams west, all along the western shore of the Hudson River. And we have all the way down to almost Newburgh and Middle Hope, down in that neck of the woods, and all the way out to Ellenville. Now, the reason it was so big and so strategic is because, think about the time frame, 1609. There was no transportation, no trains, planes, cars, buses. All there was the water. And because that area, the Roundout, with the many waters, and that's why the Native Americans, the indigenous people here, the Lenape and the Muncie Indians, or the tribes, they came and settled in this area because all of the rivers, the Black Creek, the Esopus, the Wallkill, the Hudson, which the Indians called Mahattantuck, that was their name. And the reason that, and that says that it's the river that flows in two directions.
Yeah, I've heard
now,
that, yes.
given the fact that it is, because they would use the tide to go back and forth, and using that because it was all by either animal, by foot, or by water. And that's why all the streams and everything, you'll see all the settlements were right there. And the Roundout is the culmination of where the Wallkill comes in, where the Roundout comes in, the Esopus attaches to it, and all of the tributaries, Black Creek, you'll see in that regard. So that being said, all of the indigenous people, all their sites were here. And that's why we find stuff going back 3,000 years with the artifacts, the thumbs, the pound stones, the grinders, the what's commonly known as arrowheads. But most of them aren't really arrowheads. They're tools. Some of them were atolls, points. And that's what they were called, points, or knives, or scrapers, and awes. And so we see all of that. And we have some pottery shards that were made with the clay that was indigenous to this area in a great degree, which gives us another of its very important factors, which is the bricks that are made here. all along the western part of the Hudson, all the way from Catskill down to Garrison on the west side of the Hudson River, when the glaciers dropped their sediment, and it was rich, iron rich, and that's what gives the bricks that red clay, that red rust color.
Yeah.
And so with that being said, they would make pottery with that, and then they would bake it, and you know, that no kilns back then. And a little tidbit. Now, I'm going to add tidbits as I go across with this.
I love that.
Because
that's
this is cool
want.
Stuff. I love yes, talking about
that's
it.
Wonderful.
And that is that 98% of every brick in New York City came from this area, the Mid-Hudson Valley. And that's, we're talking billions, not millions, but billions of bricks. And 98% of them are from here. Now, also, because of the sediment and the geology of the area, which was very important for the not only the agriculture, but the industry and the resources, was the cement, the limestone that would be making cement, some of the strongest cement in the world.
Really?
And if we and another tidbit, that the base of the Statue of Liberty is made with bricks and blocks from this area and the cement of Rosendale cement, which is most of your cement that was mined in that area, that was, you know, one of the strongest in the world, actually, which was the Rosendale cement. And there was many caves that now then the caves turned into, after they depleted all of the limestone and what they used for the to making the both the firing of the cement and the bricks, they also used the caves that were there for mushrooms. Some of the biggest mushroom caves in right here in the Mid-Hudson Valley, in Kingston, Rosendale, and even Iron Mountain, you know, like where we call, where they store the records of, you know, the corporate stores all their records in Iron Mountain. Well, that also was part of the dugout in the caverns of and then some of them were, as I said, became mushrooms. And that became another thing. And then they were all, by the way, and then the transportation, not only just for all of the agricultural products that weren't used here, but also the agricultural products that were sent to down to the city and up to Schenectady later on. Everything went by barge, by the thousands, down to New York City and up to Schenectady, and all points in between. Now, in the industry, they needed to have a fuel. Now, back in the day when this was all forested, well, they used the trees and they burned coal. And then when the Industrial Revolution happened, then they needed some coal. Now, there is no coal. That's one of the resources we don't have in New York State.
Yeah.
Ergo, they make the D&H Canal that goes all the way out to Pennsylvania, one of the richest coal deposits in the states.
Yep.
And they, through the canal, they would bring it all the way down to the roundout, and 108 miles from Honesdale, Pennsylvania, to the roundout, right in between between Kingston and Port Ewan on the Hudson River. Right there where the lighthouse is, one of the few remaining lighthouses. There's three remaining lighthouses on the river right now. Yeah. One is in Saugerties, and one is in Kingston Point, and one is in Esopus, which is Esopus Meadows. And you could come and visit them. And they're beautiful spots, and they're nice hiking areas. And this area for hiking is absolutely gorgeous. For hiking, and that's why, you know, I love the area. To me, it's a gem of the nation.
It is. We have a lot of great stuff here, a lot of history. You mentioned the like the statue, basically the Statue of Liberty being made with our bricks and stuff. And I think I had a gentleman on the show, Ron Gabriel, local historian here in Catskill.
Yeah.
He was talking about a shipyard in Athens. This was another show 4 or 5 years ago, but he mentioned that I think a lot of the bricks for the Empire State Building came from this area.
Well, that goes to say 98% of every single brick in New York City, every brick, I mean, that's billions, came from this area.
Wow.
I mean, when something. I say this area, I mean this Mid-Hudson Valley.
Sure,
and
sure.
And that extends from where we are right now, sitting today in Catskill, down to like Garrison. That's the Mid-Hudson Valley. Then it gets down to the Palisades, and then it gets down to the Hudson Harbor down in Jersey.
Yeah.
And so we are living in this area is one of the most eclectic areas of the nation. And it's the birthplace of many of the great pieces of history that not only for the county and the state, which Kingston, as you well know, was the first capital in New York State.
Yes.
But it also, they had government meetings way before, after, you know, the signing of the Declaration of Independence and during that revolutionary time, that met at some of the places right next door to the museum, which the museum was an old church, a Dutch Reformed church,
yes.
And that's the Kleinis Opus Museum. And we have an incredibly, very eclectic, not a volume of stuff, but we touch on all these facets of this gem. And agriculture was one of the major ones here. That's one of the things that saved us from being consumed by the world city of the United Nations. Now, this is a tidbit that I love to tell people about, that but for the people and the history of the Mid-Hudson Valley, the United Nations in 1948, after the failure of the League of Nations, decided they were going to have this organization that was going to bring world peace. Okay, it failed once, and it'll fail again.
Right.
But which we're seeing that. But I don't want to get political because I don't want to get there.
No.
So, but the point is that in 1948 they were looking for a place to build a world city. Our museum, the church that we are now in, that's now a museum, was dead center of that area on the Hudson River, 22,000 acres. And it extended all to the lakes, all the way up to the Roundout, and all the way down to Lloyd, the town of Highland, and all the way back to the Chuanga Mountains, to the Hussey Mountains. Mm-hmm. Now, I have architectural pictures of this, which is so cool, because when they did that, they were going to make it a world city. Now, to make a world city, that means you have to have people coming in from all over the world, and they have to have their own embassies and their own structures and their own transportation. So they were going to build an airport that would literally be bigger than Idlewild and what was the other one?
JFK?
I had that here. Idlewild and LaGuardia combined. It was going to be bigger than that combined, and it was going to be all in this area, Mirror Lake, Esopus Lake. It would encompass all of that, including the riverfront, all the way of these beautiful mansions and monasteries and that. But guess what prevented it from being? First of all, the people said, not in my backyard. But you know that governments can take land when they know it's for the benefit. They can do eminent domain, as they did with Shokan Reservoir for the water for New York City.
Yeah.
They buried towns like West Hurley, and they said, we're going to take the land anyway, and we'll give you a meager amount for it. So that's what, so if they tried to do that, there are three reasons why you cannot take of eminent domain, why you can't do that. The first reason is if it's agricultural, that provides not only the workforce, but also the food supply for a large area. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And of course, this was all agriculture. It was apple orchards, grape vineyards, squash, corn, you name it, cherries, the whole area was the flatlands of the Roundout of the Walk Hill River is all flood ground. and that's beautiful farming land, and that's where, of course, the indigenous people, the Lenape and the Munsee Indians, says, this is great. We can grow all of our stuff here. And so that was one, but that wasn't enough. Also, historical archaeological burial grounds. Now, they did say that there were some in Shokan, where in West Hurley, where they were going to remove the bodies. They had to remove it and plant it another place. But there were so many in this area because of the history, mm-hmm. that was number two. The third one, I don't remember what it was, but it didn't count anyway. Right. But because of those two reasons, we don't have a world city, which would be bigger than New York City when you think about it, with a airport that would be bigger than both LaGuardia and Idlewild together. Now, Kennedy and whatever the other one is. Yeah. But that's, so we are very fortunate that this area has maintained its tenor and its beauty. Mm-hmm. And we can thank people. And we can thank people like some of our most popular people that were here, which John Burroughs lives within walking distance of Slab Sides of the museum. Okay. So, and one of his granddaughters wrote a book, this book that I have here, which is The History of West Park and Esopus, which was by Elizabeth Burroughs Kelly. That was her, her history.
Right.
And John Burroughs, being the world person that he was and world renowned, had many world renowned friends. For example, I'm going to name some names.
Okay.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Ah.
Was a good friend of his. They hunted, they fished in the area, they camped in the area right around the Black Creek and around the whole Esopus area, the Kingston Hurley area. They hunted and they fished. And that's why he knew he was a conservationist, mm-hmm. and he made the first national parks.
Yeah.
And also a friend of his. Ironically, my sons and I, yeah. have camped and hunted in the same areas that she talks about in her book. And I'm saying, I was there. I did. I know the falls he's talking about. I know the bend in the creek there. And this was like, and he became the president in 1904. Mm-hmm. He was running on an independent ticket. And I'll tell you what the ticket name. It wasn't a Republican, it was a Democrat. Okay. It was a Bull Moose Party.
And
it was the first time an independent actually, you know, won a major election. And who did he beat? Nobody knows the losers. Because back then it was like the president and vice president was elected separately. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he became the vice president.
Right.
And that was Alton Parker, who lived within walking distance of the museum.
Oh my God.
Well, so there's so much history. Yeah. The connections are uncanny. And, you know, so, and because they have the transportation, which was a big thing, they had the railroad. Now, the influential people that he know, and I'll go back to Burroughs, people like Henry Ford were visiting that area. Mm-hmm. Sojourner Truth was a native son or daughter of Esopus, went to the church that was built in 1827, which was the church that we had, and the wooden church burned down, and they built this one in brick in 1827. Okay. No plumbing, no heating, except for potbelly stoves, and the burn marks are still in the floor. it's kind of, you know, if you come down, it's a community museum. There's no charge. It's, like I say, we're a nonprofit organization, right. So everything is, you know, just come and visit us.
Sounds wonderful.
And enjoy.
And I understand there's an event coming up that you might want to invite some of our listeners to.
I would love to invite everyone who is in this listening area or anybody that wants to. Is we're having our annual Strawberry Festival. Now, our first Strawberry Festival was held in 1961.
Okay.
And it was held at the Grange. And that's the kind of thing that we're putting together now. We've had it annually every time except for COVID. Mm-hmm. And this is the second one after COVID that we're having. But it's going to be on our grounds. And as I said, the public is invited. We're going to have a regular old Grange family kind of thing with games and music and children and playing, you know. And it's going to be hot dogs and hamburgers and strawberries. Mm. And incidentally, the reason we chose the 22nd of June is when it's going to be is because on the 22nd of June, there's going to be a full moon. And guess what that full moon is called? A strawberry moon. So June 22nd, full moon, strawberry moon, and you know, please, anybody, it would be, you know, it's so wholesome that people can actually go in and look and touch. And that's one of the things nice about our museum. We have things that people can touch. I let the kids, they can actually ring the bell. And that was one of my lures. If you behave, the original bell that was built in 1827 in the steeple, that if you behave yourself, I'll let you ring the bell. And boy, I'll tell you, that's one of the things that they absolutely love.
Oh, I bet.
But it's a beautiful thing. It's a community affair. The community is all get together. We have all donations from a lot of our sponsors and people, even anonymously, because they just don't want to, you know, they feel like just giving. But they just give because it's just putting it out for the people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, please come. We're going to have music. We're going to have games. We're going to have, and we have a special treat of the Taylor Brock and Jonathan Palmer are going to be speaking. And they are he was the county, I believe, or is the county historian. And I believe Jonathan was up here in Catskill. Yes. I think he was the...
He's been on the Backtracks in Time here a couple times I've had him
on.
Oh,
okay. Yes. So, well, he's going to be our guest speaker, and we're going to have music going on outside.
That's
so
super.
Come visit us.
Join
us in the festivities.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Well, I think we're about our time here.
Well, there's so much more to talk about. Another time, and if you'll have me again, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Like a part two.
Okay, yes. That's a lot of things and little tidbits that would be very enjoyable. So thank you again for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much. And so, anyway, thank you, Lewis, for joining us today. And again, this is Jack Sensabaugh for Backtracks in Time. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.